You guys know I'm crazy about Audible because it offers an incredible selection of audiobooks across every genre. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, including the latest bestsellers and new releases. Audible really is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment, with female writers and heroines, celebrity narration, multicast productions with immersive sound design, and traditional audiobooks. Audible has you covered for any type of excitement that you're looking for. In fact, right now I'm listening to The Second Husband by Kate White. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/realitylife or text realitylife to 500-500. That's audible.com/realitylife or text realitylife to 500-500. With four daughters and two on a dance team, I can tell you we go through a lot of mascara in my house. But I'm crazy about L'Oreal Paris new Panorama Mascara, which catches every lash from corner to corner for maximum volume. If you're looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank, this is yours. The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. I've been using it for about 2 weeks now, and I feel like my eye has completely opened up, and the girls are crazy about it too. They've got a tapered brush to catch every lash, one of the best mascara wands that I've ever used. And like I said, this luxe appearance of this gold package, you got to get it. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today. L'Oreal Paris new Panorama Mascara. You're going to love it.
The amazing Kate Casey.
Welcome back to another episode of Reality Life with Kate Casey. Hope that you've had a great week. I've got a great episode for you, but first I have to tell you a couple things you must check out. 14 Peaks, Nothing is Impossible is on Netflix. This follows a Nepalese mountaineer and his team as they attempt to climb all 14 of the 8,000-er peaks within a record amount of time. They wanted to do it under 7 months. And just so you know, the previous record was over 7 years. This is the most inspiring athletic story. I promise you, you'll be sitting at the edge of your seat. You will love it. And Fruitcake Fraud on Discovery Plus is nuts. Over the course of 9 years, a whopping $17 million was embezzled from Corsicana, Texas's revered Collins Street Bakery, which is the world's most famous purveyor of fruitcake. I know you're asking yourself, who eats fruitcake? I'm telling you, people do. If you love true crime, right up your alley. It's called Fruitcake Fraud Discovery Plus. And then make sure that you note that on Friday, 20-somethings Austin is on Netflix. This is going to be a must watch. I promise you it will go to number one on Netflix. My friend is the executive producer. He's on my show Friday. This is a coming of age reality series set in Austin, Texas. 20-somethings navigating love and friendships and starting new adventures. You will love it. And speaking of coming of age reality series, today's show includes an interview with Beth Stolarczyk from The Real World, Los Angeles. I have been wanting to talk to her for so many years. The first Real Worlds are, of course, some of my favorite. Paramount Plus is featuring The Real World Homecoming Los Angeles, the reboot of the iconic MTV reality program Real World, reuniting former castmates to rehash the most dramatic moments from their seasons and to give viewers an update on their post-show lives. That show originally aired in 1993, so they have reunited Beth Anthony, David, Glenn, Irene, John, and Tammy for season two of this new series. The Real World Los Angeles was, again, the second of the Real World series, and it focused on a group of diverse strangers living together for several months in Venice Beach and following their lives and their interpersonal relationships. What made this episode or the series so interesting was an incident involving a blanket. And it really unraveled a lot of the pre-Me Too movement topic. So in episode 6 of the original Los Angeles season, David was trying to rip a blanket off of Tammy while she was lying in bed and eventually on the floor of a hallway while she repeatedly told him to stop and resist his tugging. And after David removed the blanket, she was wearing only a bra and underwear and ran to hide in a bathroom. She later confronted David and the rest of the men in the house for laughing and egging him on. So after a night of litigating his behavior, Tammy and the other female roommates, Beth, who is my guest today, and Irene ultimately convinced the rest of the house to take a vote. And when they voted, they chose for him to leave the house. So when they bring them back together, they have them rewatch that scene of that blanket incident and talk about what happened in that scene in 1993, but you also hear how it changed the course of their lives. And there are so many layers to it that are brought up. And I have to tell you, it left me crying. It was like cringing at moments and crying. And I just think it's a really important scene in television to talk about, and to talk about how the lens through which we look is so different from 1993 to 2021. So I was eager to talk to Beth about that experience being on the show. And she has been working in this space for many years and just so interesting to talk to. And then I got a chance to interview Sonia Sohn. She's the director of a superb documentary on HBO this week. I'm begging you guys to watch. It's called Slow Hustle, because it's about the death of a veteran detective, Sean Suter. He was killed, or died, I should say, on November 15th of 2017. He was shot in the head while on duty in West Baltimore. And so it sparks new questions of corruption within the Baltimore Police Department. Questions surrounding his death remain unanswered, and some believe that the police department may have been involved. So it's a story about police corruption and the resulting public distrust and the socio-political climate around BLM, but it's also a true crime story. So it's got candid interviews with members of the police department, his widow and children, journalists committed to uncovering the truth, lawyers and political leaders, and really examines the continuing mystery surrounding his death and the multiple theories that emerge in the investigation of the case, including that his death was a calculated murder, hit, or a suicide. Because his death came one day before he was scheduled to testify before a federal grand jury investigating a 2010 drug planting incident, part of a police corruption probe. Sonia, the director, is well known for the show The Wire. So it's like she's coming back to Baltimore to do this documentary about an incident that is still unanswered in their city. Both shows are fantastic. Real World, Los Angeles Homecoming, and Slow Hustle, the documentary on HBO this week. So just to go through that again, 14 Peaks, Nothing is Impossible on Netflix, Fruitcake Fraud and Discovery Plus, 20-somethings Austin on Netflix, and then in this episode, Beth Stolarczyk from The Real World Homecoming on Paramount Plus, and Sonia Sohn from Slow Hustle on HBO this week. Here we go. Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way that you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach, like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry. And the best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman, and they pass the savings on to us. So I just got a 100% organic cotton tiered maxi skirt in red and a chiffon pleated midi skirt in soft pink. Now I'm going to wear both of them with either a white scoop t-shirt or a black tank top. In fact, wait, should we all get the same outfit and meet for drinks? Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/KKC for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/KKC to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/KKC. This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. If you're looking for new style inspiration, Saks.com is the place to go. Saks.com is making it easy for me to shop for the spring with their selection of chic clothes and accessories. Right now, I'm looking at Saks.com so I can find my new going out vibe. I'm looking for a breezy Zimmerman dress for an evening cocktail party. And for my upcoming conference in Los Angeles, I'm looking at bright Chloe blazers because I'm pushing myself to wear more orange and pink. Saks.com will inspire you to shop for everything on your agenda. So find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com. First of all, Beth Stolarczyk, I've been trying to find you for a very long time. Do you know this? I've been trying to hunt you down for a long time. I can't believe I finally achieved success.
Oh my gosh. Well, you know, it's such a pleasure to be here with you now. I mean, that's Real World. I'm easy to find.
So I always loved watching your show because I think that, well, first of all, it was just a beautiful place to film. But again, those early seasons, they did the best job of finding so many different kinds of people. And that seminal period of someone's time, that coming of age time, I think is so great to watch. And we watch you come from Ohio. Tell me what made you join the show and who you thought you would be at that point of your life.
Okay. So yes, I grew up in Cleveland, Ohio, with very limited life experience. I went to college at Ohio University in Athens, Ohio, and I always wanted to move out to Los Angeles. So I picked up, I didn't know anybody, and I ended up moving into a fraternity house at UCLA. I rented a room during the summer and moved out, and I got a job working for Guns N' Roses. And I saw the first season of The Real World, and I was just, I couldn't believe how amazing that show was. Yeah. Showing all of these people in their 20s, sharing their lives, and they had such great aspirations. And I was just captivated, immediately captivated. And I thought Eric Nice was so hot. And I was like, oh my God, I want to meet him. How can I meet him? I got to try and get on this show. I mean, not only do I want to be on MTV, because it's like the coolest thing ever to be on MTV, but like, I want to meet Eric Nice.
Were you surprised that you got on the show? Because we think about this now, the mountain of tapes. This was like VHS tape days that they must have gotten for the second season after the first season aired and people went crazy for it. I mean, were you in disbelief that it happened?
Yeah. I mean, look, I wasn't in the 90s, right? Everything was, you know, the women were very Baywatch looking, right? And it was very in to be very skinny with big boobs. And that was not me at all. And so I honestly didn't think I had a chance, but I'm going to try. Right. So yes, I mean, I was surprised, like, wow, I didn't know anybody. I didn't have to sleep with anybody. And I got on the show, which is amazing to me. Amazing. Like, I can't believe this is happening to me. My life is never going to be the same.
So how many months did you end up filming?
We ended up filming for almost 6 months.
6 months. So how did those 6 months of filming, and then of course when it airs on television, which is a whole other aspect to this whole experience, how did that ultimately change the trajectory of your personal life and your career?
Oh, wow. Well, I mean, my personal life, I mean, I thought it would be cool because I get to meet, you know, like, you know, I wanted to meet guys, right? So yeah. I would like go out, but then I was like, well, you know, this isn't really that cool because I want to date somebody who's going to like me for me, not because I'm on MTV. And so I actually did not date that much because of it. And then, you know, when I got off the show, nobody kind of knew what to do with me. And I tried to get a job working in casting. And I was like praying to God, nobody was going to recognize me. So I like got this job. I'm working for this casting director. And then like on the second or third day, somebody was coming in for an audition and it was Sean Hayes from Will and Grace.
Oh boy.
And he was like, oh my God, you're best with The Real World. I want your picture. I was like, oh no. And then my boss was like, wait a minute, what? What's going on here? And I was like, oh my God. And I was like, I'm on this show, but like, I really want this job. She already hired me and I was already there. So, that was good. But yeah, Sean Hayes, he kind of blew my cover.
Was he like, tell me everything and don't leave anything out? Cause I would have been.
He was great. People did not know what to do with me being on a reality show because everybody definitely knew who we were, but nobody knew what to do with us.
A lot of real worlders will tell me I was famous, but not successful. Mm-hmm. And that was hard to kind of wrap my brain around. So did you feel like everybody knew you, but didn't necessarily translate into your bank account or job opportunities right away?
Yeah. I mean, look, I think maybe some people might be expecting, you know, I should be getting offers left and right. I mean, that's not how it works. Yeah. You got to work for it. Right. So, I decided, you know, I'm not going to sit around and wait for somebody to drop an offer. I've got to figure out how I can make things happen for myself. So, I worked in casting for a while, and then I started managing reality TV stars. I wrote a treatment with somebody, and it was a horror movie where reality stars get killed one by one. And there was like a bidding war over the treatment, and I made a lot of money, but then the movie never got made. And I was but that was great. And then, you know, I mean, I put a lot of cool deals together for other reality TV stars. And then I decided, you know what, I'm going to start producing my own projects. And so I got an investor, and then I decided that I was going to produce TV shows and calendars based on the sexiest men and women of reality TV.
Brilliant.
And then it was doing really well. I was, I put together shows for In Demand and DirecTV, and it was doing super, super well. And VH1 ended up buying it 1 year, but then it never made it to air. I was like, oh my gosh. So there's like this pilot at VH1 somewhere that we did and never got shown. And then, after that, I got married and I had kids. Mm-hmm. And then I invented a cupcake maker, because I was tired of making cupcakes. We were making such a mess. So I came up with this contraption that would like equal measurements for like small cupcakes that would not make a mess, and that called it squeezy cakes. And then I decided, you know what, I'm getting really, really old and I don't want to get plastic surgery. So I designed lashes that give the illusion of an eye lift.
Like
so
that.
Now. So, you know, I mean, look, I don't regret doing the show. I've done a bunch of challenges as mm-hmm. well. But I've always kind of been my own boss for the most part. And I mean, I just think my life definitely would not be the same. I mean, I've made a lot of friends from the show. I mean, some people don't like me from the show, but that's okay. Right. Yeah. but I do have a lot of friends from the show, and it's definitely opened a lot of doors. And I mean, look, I mean, I did Challenge All Stars this year, which was great. And now doing this Real World Homecoming has been amazing. I mean, who knows what's going to happen? You are never too old, right?
And I also think what this series has shown, and we'll talk about this more, is that, I mean, that's the great thing I always loved about Unscripted is like, if you watch a scripted show, those characters just end. And with the Unscripted, you can follow someone throughout their life. So if somebody liked you in the Real World in 1993, they certainly want to know what you're doing in 2021. They want to know who you are, the kind of family life that you have, what kind of jobs you have, how this whole thing has continuously changed the course of your life. And that's what I think is such a blessing. And certainly in the new series that you're part of now. Working with reality stars, what do you think is the archetype of the most successful kind of reality star? And is it your experience that those are very few and far between?
I mean, look, in order to be a successful reality star, you've got to definitely be open to being vulnerable and open and sharing your opinion and really not caring what other people think, because it could really, could really be mentally harmful for you if you don't have thick skin, right? So right. I think for anybody out there that wants to do it, yeah, you got to have thick skin and be confident in who you are. Or otherwise, you know, there could be some mental problems down the road.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what kind of reality stars did you manage? Like what kind of shows were they on?
I mean, a lot of people from the Real World, because those people that I knew and that I was friends with. But like when I was doing all my TV shows, and calendars, I mean, I was hiring people from American Idol and Survivor, Amazing Race, The Bachelor, all the different shows.
Yeah.
So, I mean, look, I've had a lot of fun and I would not change it for anything. I've had a blast and I'm the future is bright for me. So I'm looking forward to doing other things as well. And, you know, it's funny because a lot of these people we're friends off camera. So, I mean, I feel like in a way I'm kind of living a reality show. Doing a show, I'm actually living a reality show because, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on between all, you know,
yeah,
between all of us. I mean, people think I'm dramatic. I mean, everybody that's on these shows, you know.
For sure. So let's talk about coming back.
Okay.
I was not prepared for what an emotional roller coaster would be. Now, when we watched this years ago, the whole blanket incident was really jarring. And I did feel like there were really important lessons to be learned from it. But what, again, I like so much about this series is that when you revisit it, it's even more complicated and multi-layered than we had ever thought in 1993.
Yes.
So first, you agree to show up. Who are you most excited to connect with?
I mean, I'm excited to hang out with John because John is like one of my best friends.
I love him dearly.
I don't get to see him that much. So to be able to, I'm getting paid to hang out with John. This is going to be so fun. And the rest of the people I didn't really see. I mean, Tammy, I haven't seen her since maybe we did like a reunion right after, you know, like a year or two after the show. And otherwise, I mean, we've never crossed paths. I've never seen her. I did see David on a couple challenges back in the day, a long, long time ago. And, you know, none of that ended on a great note. So I was really looking forward to coming back. You know, I've lived some life. Mm-hmm. I'm not as self-absorbed as I was back then. I'm married. I have kids. I have empathy. And I just think I'm more well-equipped to have some real conversations with people. And I didn't really get along with most of my roommates. So this is an opportunity for me to go back and maybe walk away with some more friends.
You get into it right away. You walk
in right away
and
coming in hot right away,
which I appreciated it because it does feel like, you know, we're all adults now and enough time has happened that if we just need to rip the bandaid off and really get to the core of this so that we can really enjoy who we are at this stage of our life.
Yeah.
So walk me through sitting down and rewatching the blanket incident because I was surprised at how much you were all I was not surprised, but also felt tremendous empathy for all of you to have to rewatch that. And particularly for you, for Irene, and for Tammy, all I wanted to do in that moment is rush to you all and to hug you because it really seemed to affect you all the most.
Yeah. I mean, look, that footage was hard to watch. And there's a lot of, some of the footage we've never even seen before. And so that was hard. And to see, confessionals and reactions of things that we never saw before. And we're seeing it for the first time with everybody, with cameras on us. That was difficult because we're all traumatized in different ways, mm-hmm. right? I mean, Tammy's traumatized. I'm traumatized. Irene is traumatized. We're all going through something different at the time. And so I'm just trying to process everything that's going on. And it's bringing up all these emotions about how I felt about that situation that maybe I didn't remember that are there now for me. Mm-hmm. And and then, you know, Tammy starts talking about her body dysmorphia, which, by the way, she did talk to me and John about that the day before. So that wasn't the first time we heard that information.
The day before in the year 2021 or the first day of filming in 1993?
No, on the very first day when we came back to the house in 2021.
I see.
She had shared that with us. And I mean, it wasn't completely surprising to me because I lived with her for almost 6 months. So, I mean, I did know that she had some issues with her body and she wired her mouth shut. So you're going to tell me you had body dysmorphia. I'm not shocked by that. But it was very emotional when she did tell us that. And I did apologize to Tammy. And I said, look, I have to apologize to you right now because I thought that everything that you did on the show was choreographed and fake. And I just thought you were a fake and a phony. And for that, I apologize. Because that's what I thought about you in 1993.
Yeah.
And I told her point blank right when we got there. And that was not, we didn't see that. So then you cut to the next day when we're all sitting there. And then Tammy shares that information with everybody. And then Beth and Glenn go up to see Tammy, which was easy for them to do, by the way, because they weren't involved in the situation. So right. They could get up and go. But we're having a conversation with, you know, a group conversation. And Tammy's in the other, you know, obviously needed space. And by the way, she also did tell me on the first day after I hugged her, which they did not show. She said, oh, there's Beth S getting in people's personal space. Nothing has changed. Okay. So I wasn't going to go run after her because she said that to me after we hugged.
Yeah.
So why would I go running after her at that specific moment? Regardless, we were we were in a discussion sitting on the couch together. We're all trying to process things. And then Beth Anthony's like, oh, I think we just missed something here. And it's like, no, you know what? You're like a viewer. You weren't even here.
Right.
That day. You weren't even here. You don't know what's going on. She's being judgmental. I'm trying to process. And listening to David, and you know, I have empathy for Tammy and for David. If Tammy doesn't want to believe that, I'm sorry. If I didn't care about Tammy, I'd tell her right to her face. And I think anybody that knows me or has seen me on any of the, you know, other reality shows knows I don't ride the fence. Okay. If I don't like you, I will tell you, no problem. If I don't care, I'll tell you, but I do care. I care about David and I care about Tammy. And there's nothing wrong with that. I almost felt like she wanted me to like pick sides because I didn't run to her right away. I feel okay about it. I wanted to finish my conversation with David. And then after that, I went and I talked to Tammy. That wasn't acceptable for her. You know what? I'm sorry. Doesn't mean I don't care.
It was an unenviable position for all of you.
Yeah.
Because it's so much more complicated. And it's even more complicated as the years go by. And
yeah.
It was weird as you watched because it was like 5 minutes in, you're soul crushing for Tammy. And then five more minutes into it, David starts to talk and then you feel empathy for him.
Yeah.
And you think, oh my, this isn't even what I thought it was. But I'm also very cognizant of how traumatic it would be to rewatch that episode with the extra footage. And I wondered if any of you felt like maybe this would have been better if there was a therapist that was there to kind of help you guys navigate it. It just felt like re-injury and like leaving you guys in the middle of a room and walking away. And I don't know if there was anything they could have done other than that to have a therapist there. And that said, with John, who is such a kind and loving person and always wants to help people. But did you feel like this was like something where it was such a traumatic experience, you needed a therapist there?
You know, that might have been a good idea. Yeah. That might have been a good idea. Maybe next time we'll have a therapist.
Maybe. But then I just thought, I had empathy for all of you too, because it felt like Tammy still had so much to unravel with it.
Yeah.
That it was almost unfair for her to have total clarity with any of you because she was so in her head and as one would understand. So have you looked back at that footage of all of you sitting in that room? Or is that something like I've lived it and I think I need to move past?
I mean, look, it's hard. It's hard. It's hard for me to watch.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, we all have to accept responsibility for how we handled it.
Yeah.
I mean, could I have handled it better? Absolutely. Yes. But I'll tell you what, point blank directly call David what David keeps saying that I called him, because I didn't do that.
Right.
You can see the video. And for all these years, everybody thought that like I was the one who said, I'm going to, you know, call the cops and scream rape. No, that was not me. I did not say that. And what I said was based on something that David said to me. People need to understand, we did not kick David out just because of the blanket incident.
Yes, there was much more.
We got rid of him because he acted like an idiot while we were living together a lot. And I'm sorry, if somebody takes down their pants and swings their dick at me, no, I'm not going to talk to you anymore.
Right.
I didn't make you do that. You did that. So if somebody doesn't want to hire you because you're swinging your dick at me, I'm sorry. That's wrong. You shouldn't have done it. Just say you're sorry, take responsibility. I said I'm sorry to him. I'm taking responsibility, you know, for what I did. Yeah, you know what? I shouldn't have used that as an analogy. I'm sorry. But to lay it on me and Irene that we ruined his career, right. Sorry, I don't buy that. We did not make you do all of the things that you did in the house. I mean, he body shamed me constantly, made fun of my appearance. He choked John on the third day. He would blow up about everything in the house. We couldn't live with the guy. We couldn't live with him.
Yeah.
So if you want to live with a guy like that acts like that and who swings his dick in your face, walking to your bedroom, you know, you're a better person. I can't do it.
Beth and Glenn join the show. Do you still feel like it's hard to connect with them because they weren't there from the first day? It's almost like living parallel experiences.
I mean, look, they're Beth and Glenn are great, but yeah, I mean, they were not there during that whole thing. And so it felt a little awkward, like watching that and sharing that with them, because like, first of all, like I didn't get along with Glenn at all. So I'm like, it was just weird. It was like, yeah, it just felt weird for me. And so that's part of the reason also why I took David and wanted to go talk to him outside away from people. Cause I just felt there was just way too much
noise
going on.
Yeah.
So I needed to take him aside and look him in the eye and make sure that he heard me and heard my apology. It's a shit show.
Is there somebody that you were really eager to kind of figure out that relationship?
I mean, look, I want to spend quality time with everyone. I want to spend quality time with Irene and the other Beth and Glenn, and you know, David and Tammy. I didn't really get to spend time with Tammy back in the day. So this is my opportunity, and that's what I'm hoping for. And that's why I got really emotional when Tammy was like, I don't fuck with you all. And I was like, oh man, you know, now she's like got this wall up and we just moved in together. Like, this is not what I wanted to happen. This is the exact opposite of what I wanted right now. So, so that bummed me out, made me sad.
Did you feel like the experience was worth it to go back and to see each other again?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely glad. I mean, to be able to do it twice is a blessing.
Yeah.
And I think that we're all evolving. And I mean, just when it started, I was just feeling comfortable and then it was over. So, I mean, I would be open to doing it again, because I really think that we're constantly evolving. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure if I don't know, we have to see how the other people feel, but I mean, there's definitely, we'll see what happens.
So update us on your life now. You have daughters.
So I have a son and a daughter. My daughter just turned 13 yesterday. I officially have a teenager, and my son is 10, and I've been married for 13 years, and I'm the CEO of iLusion Lashes Beverly Hills, which is my lash line that gives the illusion of an eye lift. So I recommend them to everybody. Everybody keeps asking me like what I did to make myself look younger. And that's the truth. Like, I design them and they're amazing. They make me feel confident and beautiful. And so if they work for me, they're going to work for everybody out there, and they make a great gift. So yeah, so that's what I'm doing. And I mean, who knows, maybe I'll do some more challenges in the future. We'll see.
And then, so where can everybody catch the show and find you?
So everybody can catch the show on Paramount Plus. It's so great because not only can you watch The Real World Homecoming, but you can also watch all of the original seasons of The Real World. You can watch a bunch of the challenge shows. I mean, there's such great programming on there. And you can catch me on social at Beth's Real World and MTV Beth. And I just joined TikTok, everyone. I'm like a TikTok sensation now. It's so much fun. And then IllusionLashesBeverlyHills.com for my lashes. And yeah.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you. So great speaking with you.
Whether you need to buy or sell, or you're just obsessed with looking at homes for sale, Redfin's got you covered. Redfin updates their listings every 2 minutes so you can see new homes first. And they give you personalized recommendations based on the homes that you like, so you can find the home that's just right for you, whether that's a cabin, a craftsman, or a castle. With the top-rated Redfin app, you can favorite homes, share listings with others, and schedule tours, and even on the same day, with a local Redfin agent who can help guide you through the whole home buying process. And if you're looking to sell, Redfin agents have the experience to get you the best price possible for your home. That's because they sell twice as many homes as other agents. With a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin's fees are half of what others often charge, which means you'll have more money to put towards what matters most to you, like your next home. In fact, last year, Redfin saved home sellers $127 million. No matter where you are in your real estate journey, Redfin can help. Download the Redfin app to get started today.
If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
Sonia, this is Spellbinding. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
This is so well done. I know that you have a deep connection to the city of Baltimore. I feel like I do myself as well.
Well, I came to the city to do the show, of course. I think most people know. Afterwards, I started a nonprofit organization once I saw that The Wire had a connection, that there was a connection between The Wire, the show, and formerly incarcerated young people. So there was a program that was developed out of that that used the show as a teaching tool. But from there, I just, you know, became drawn into community work and then started to explore how I could be a bit more useful in other ways, seeing as, you know, I was also acting and being in Baltimore doing community work and whatnot. You know, Baltimore, I have a deep love for the place. I feel that it's a home to me, and it's a reflection of my own sort of of my own spirit, you know. When I was given the opportunity to look at this story, initially I didn't jump right into it. I didn't want to go into another film about law enforcement or that had a law enforcement component. But once I executed the development period and met Nicole and began to see the story and the journalists involved and started to see that maybe there were some pieces missing here mm-hmm. that hearkened to a greater, like that this could have been sort of a micro, if there's an injustice here, it could be a microcosmic sort of picture of what could happen on a larger level. You know, if the police department is involved in this death in some way, then what does that mean for the rest of us? If they're willing to throw a cop and his innocent family, you know, to the side. And so that became, for me, a parallel sort of investigation, you know.
So talk to me a little bit about the history of the Baltimore Police Department, because growing up in the East Coast, I mean, they had a horrible reputation.
Yeah, there is a history there for sure. And a history that harkens back, you know, further back than the 60s, you know, that goes back to the 1800s.
So police believe that he was killed with his service weapon and came to the conclusion that he died by suicide. And an outside panel of experts and then a Maryland State Police review supported the Baltimore Police Department's position. And his family rejects that he took his own life. You followed his widow and children as they attempted to hold to account police officials and politicians. And I kept wondering as I watched this, how you were able to gain the trust of the family, because I would imagine they were at a point where it was hard to trust anybody.
Yeah, I it was difficult, you know, and I did take a while. We became acquainted with the attorney who had been working on Sean's case, whom they even had to develop a relationship with. But also Sean's partner, JJ, his general, his usual everyday partner, JJ, was someone we had actually met Sean during the filming of Baltimore Rising. There's a shot in the film where you see Sean laughing yes. at JJ. That's from when I was shooting Baltimore Rising. I was trying to get, there was like a cop team that we followed into a homicide. That night was the night that we embedded in the homicide department, and we were looking for like, who's going to, you know, I really like these two guys. I was like, oh, wow. You know, I hope it's these guys that we follow. But, you know, you don't know that night they weren't up. It's like, what team is up if there is a murder? And so anyway, we saw JJ. I kept that relationship going. So I reached out to JJ, and JJ also had, you know, some association with the family, not a lot, but some.
Was it difficult at any time to straddle the relationships between the police department and the family?
Well, I wouldn't say we had a relationship with the police department, because, you know, Kevin Davis was a relationship from Baltimore Rising as well. He's the former police commissioner when he appeared in this film. But he happened to have had to deal with the Souter case. So he was directly related to that case, and he was able to speak since he was no longer the commissioner. But also, you know, there were some issues there. So I think he wanted to speak. The cops, you know, JJ, yeah, you know, he was able to speak to the degree that he was. But the internal affairs guy, Larry, is also retired. So those fellows were retired.
Well, that's good, because maybe they felt a little bit more able to be open, because that job is all encompassing. And there seems to be this, you know, for lack of a better term, a brotherhood. I mean, there are women in the police force too, but did you ever get a sense that much like the military, that you stay loyal? And so that there were people who wanted to come forward, but felt like they couldn't.
I got that sense because those people were speaking, I believe, through the attorney.
I see.
So I think whatever information we were able to gather, not whatever, but some information that we were able to gather that maybe some of the information that the journalists weren't able to get, we were able to sort of access through the attorney. There were some law enforcement who were loyal to Sean or had a completely different perspective than what was given forth in the IRB. And they were proving to be helpful on the side.
So the FBI did not want to take over the investigation. They immediately thought it was suicide. When you found that out, did the hairs on your neck kind of rise up as it did for me? Like, that's something that did not sit right with me.
Yeah, that was really interesting to me. You know, to me, it just, you know, then I heard that, you know, they want to win cases. You know, if it's not cut and dry and they don't feel like they can really win it, you know, then they just back away from it. That doesn't mean that necessarily that Sean was dirty or whatever. It felt a bit political, but again, you know, I don't want to speak out of turn. I don't know. Once I start to bump up against what again could be another level of, political strategy, you know, which to me, political strategy sometimes is where we sort of like sidestep the truth or we bend it or we brush up against it. All of that to me is the beginnings of corruption.
What is the feeling that you walked away from doing this project? Did you feel any sense of hope that if there is a case of corruption, no matter where it is in the country, that it can be fixed?
No, you know, because I didn't look at it as a political corruption film. You know, I really walked away from the film with the same question that developed during the shooting of the film. And the one that I think people, you know, should ponder, which is, you know, if we don't trust our law enforcement, you know, if our law enforcement is not to be trusted because of the way that they treated one of their own, then what does that say for the rest of us? Dee Watkins puts that question, you know, front and center in the film. And I think that's really the question I want folks to ponder walking away. If the police did have something to do with this death, and they can't solve the death of one of their own, then what does that say? Where does that leave you? And if they're willing to, so is this system, and therefore, what does that say about this particular structure of law enforcement?
My last question is if you could tell everybody a little bit about Sean, who he was as a father, as a member of his community, and as a partner?
You know, I didn't know Sean personally. I got to know him only through his friends and family. And, you know, the video of him laughing, there's just a number of videos of him laughing and joking and being this really funny, free-spirited kind of guy who just loved family and loved taking care of folks. I mean, that's kind of the, you know, the picture that I got of him in the end. And he was, you know, he appeared to be, you know, a family man. And one who liked bringing joy to his family and was very humorous and a good friend. So that's all I can really say.
The amazing Kate Casey.
I want to thank my great guests, Beth and Sonia, and remind you to click subscribe to leave a 5-star review, which is so helpful and really appreciated. You can join my Facebook group, Reality Life with Kate Casey, to talk about this episode and others. You can follow me on Twitter at Kate Casey. I tweet about shows and during shows all week long. You can find me on Instagram at Kate Casey CA. You can see what I'm up to all week, what shows I'm watching, who I'm going to be interviewing. Again, it's at Kate Casey CA. You can get my list of what to watch each week by going to katecasey.substack.com. It will come to you every Monday and give you a cheat sheet on what to watch. You can find me on TikTok at It's Kate Casey. And finally, my Patreon with bonus episodes is available at Patreon, patreon.com/KateCasey. I promise you it's worth it. Life anecdotes, more true crime, aristocracy stories, lots there. So make sure you check it out. Look forward to checking back with you on Friday. I have a fantastic guest. I will be interviewing my friend Ian from 20-somethings Netflix, but I also have a very surprise guest, and I think you're going to love it.
Murder on My Mind, a new podcast available exclusively on Wondery Plus, explores the circumstances leading up to the murder of two young men and the mistrials of the man accused of killing them. Up-and-coming rapper YNW Melly gained notoriety in the hip-hop world for his shocking lyrics and criminal exploits. When two of his best friends were gunned down in a drive-by shooting, investigators suspected the young rapper staged the scene. But after not one, but two trials that ended in hung juries and new evidence that may place YNW Melly at the scene of the crime, his trial has been paused indefinitely. With countless twists and turns, Law and Crime covers all angles of the case and begs the question, is this young artist the victim of a witch hunt or a silver-tongued devil who's evil to the core? Listen to Murder on My Mind exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.